TS Mix.
Yeah, listen up.
From above, top secret.
Jesus Christ.
.com. Featured interview.
Well, Dave, you know, our last episode, we had a chance of being able to bring to the public our little lunchside chat impromptu interview that featured you, me, Springer, John Lear, and a very interesting gentleman by the name of John Rhodes. Do you recall that, or have you had a little too much value?
I love John Rhodes.
He was very gracious enough to do that impromptu interview, and we hope you folks all enjoyed that. Well, right after we had been working on that, you had been helping John in a little technical area, and you told me about that, and you said, hey, I've been working with John for about the past hour and a half, and I go, you have, you bum, why didn't you tell me? And so we kind of conned John into doing another interview with us after Dave said that, well, look, if you'll do this, I'll come and I'll scrub your toilets for a week or so. So we got John on the phone and we asked him, hey, look, we know it's late. In fact, I think, what time was it when we actually started doing that bit of the interview? Was it about 10 p.m. West Coast time?
Yeah, it was 10 p.m. West, 11 on John's time, and then midnight on my time. So, yeah. Mm-hmm.
We actually conned him into coming back and doing another interview. Why? We don't know. Maybe he likes us. Maybe he likes us.
We'll find out at the end of the interview if it was worth it.
And so to kind of give you an idea of what John has done, he has done a number of different radio interviews and television interviews, including The Conspiracy Zone with Kevin Nealon, Unsolved Mysteries with Robert Stack, Out There with Dan Aykroyd, Strange Universe, Coast to Coast AM with George Norrie, Dreamland with Art Bell. I mean, the guy's been on just about every popular radio and talk show. We really feel lucky to be able to have him with us. And so, ladies and gentlemen, we'd like to introduce to you right now, John Rhodes. Hi, John.
Hey, Johnny. Hi, Dave.
What's going on, brother?
Not much, but you guys had me up late at night, so this is going to be cool.
This is going to be cool because we're reversing the charges.
Uh-oh, now it's not so cool.
There was a condition to us being able to do this interview, and that was that we had to be quiet so that we didn't wake up John's sleeping wife.
Boy, talk about whipped.
You know,
hey, there are some things that deserve to be truly feared in life.
Hey, listen, babe, you're preaching to the choir, trust me. Your buddy's about ready to beat the crap out of me three times out of the day, you know.
If those reptoids think they have it over somebody, they haven't got it over on my wife, I'll tell you that much.
Well, all right, we want to... Well, hang on. Let me get this in real quick. Pull up your internet browser, whatever that may be.
I thought you were going to say something else.
And go to www, as I ignore Dave as usual, to www.reptoids.com. Now, that's R-E-P-T-O-I-D-S. Make sure you add the S or you're going to go to another site that Dave went to.
The stripping and stuff. You don't want to go there.
You don't want to go there.
Yeah, but be sure you put the S on it.
If I recall correctly, now this site has been up since, is it the mid to late 90s, John?
Yeah, 97, I think we first developed the site. It was able to present the public with some sort of a mass public point of contact. Many years ago, that was. And, you know, from then forward, I was able to, through having a series of questionnaires I had on my site, get my finger on the pulse of what was going on around the United States. Now, it's only just a sampling of what's going on within the public because, you know, not everybody had internet access even back in 97. But it sure was a good point of contact and a way to reach into the phenomenon, get an idea of what people were personally going through at the earliest stages.
We're all on your website, and if everybody will click on to the website, at the very beginning of this thing, and I just want to read this. It's not like people, you know, can't read it for themselves, but this is the thing that just amazes me at the very beginning of your site. It says, in quest of the answer to the old age question, are we alone? We've been conditioned to stare into space when thinking about aliens and ETs. This is a classical magician's distraction. We should instead be searching under Earth's surface in the thousands of miles of underground tunnels, caverns, and cave systems. That is where we will discover other forms of intelligent life in our visiting extraterrestrial bases of operations. Now, basically what you're saying with that statement, John, is the ETs are not necessarily in outer space, but are in inner space. Is that right?
They're everywhere. It's as above, so below. It truly is. We're just infants in a long geological time span in which other sentient beings have existed before even ours. You have varying stages of evolutionary development with different animal beings that were native to Earth, as well as some that came from off-planet. And they just didn't come for a day visit. These guys landed a long time ago.
Right.
And they've set up bases of operations just like somebody would be setting up an outpost, like the British would set up an outpost in Africa.
Right.
And they would take somebody out there on a ship, drop them off, or even before then, the Vatican used to do the same thing, drop a priest off on the shores of some island, and then say, oh, well, we'll see you later, have fun. Remember, we want to know where the gold is and convert everybody.
Right.
And we'll be back in a year or two. And that guy was left alone to observe and learn about the different native cultures there in that geographic area. And then they would come back and pick him up. And it's this very same way with what is going on here. We can't just imagine that people are coming across time-space, you know, at a flash and just coming here for a couple seconds then veering off. They might be as well, but if we were truly a fascinating species, and I think we are from all different aspects of what humans are about, our spirituality and our psychology as biological beings, that they would want to sit here and study us, and we all know that we're being watched. It's been quite obvious. And to some certain degree being interfered with, that's debatable to what degree, of course, that they have been here, they continue to watch us. The surface of the Earth is a constant organic thing that changes and can wipe off all species just with the flash of the sun or something cosmic, just everything dead. It's happened many generations before. The only place to go is underground for safety and to conceal yourself from what might be happening on the surface. So not only does our government go underground and all these really good, deep, black operations labs and everything, they all go underground. Everybody's encouraged to go underground that wants to see a tomorrow beyond any kind of cataclysm, except the majority of mainstream America that's encouraged to build wooden square structures. God knows why. Even in hurricane zones, you know, put up a dome. Never put up a square structure, but they continue to right. do the same thing, you know. And that was always the impression I got of the definition of insanity, is doing the same thing over and over again, expecting a different result.
Right,
so,
right.
You know, these beings have been here, so they're actually are being encouraged to continually use the words ET or extraterrestrial without creating a new language to include all types of things, like how about other sentient terrestrial beings, visitors yeah. and natural inhabitants. If we got more specific even in our questions, even with our Freedoms of Information Act, we would have been able to not allow them that loophole to jump through, because you know what? I'm sure that they know that there's extraterrestrials visiting, but as long as we don't allow them any kind of ways to avoid answering our questions, when they might be dealing, even in specific incidences, dealing with maybe terrestrial beings, we can't let them escape that, saying we have no information on extraterrestrials in regards to what happened during this time at this location, blah, blah, blah.
Right.
Because
sure.
a good Philadelphia attorney would say that's the way you answer it, because then you're not really lying. You know,
right.
So I know that our government is crafty like that in the way they use language. So should we. Our evolution as individuals who are interested in the subject matter needs to go further than where it's been, which means we need to open up our language even and ask different questions in different ways.
Well, speaking of evolution, John,
we're doing it the same way for the last 60 years. We're not getting anywhere.
Right.
Right. Well, speaking of evolution here, and you've mentioned that several times here, is there more than one type? And if so, could you describe what some of these different features might be on them?
There are varying types of reptoids. The majority that have been seen look very much like a linebacker, that kind of a broad-chested, rounded-shouldered, you know, guy that looks like he could really, you know, with one good thump of the arm, you'd be several feet back.
Right.
They have large scales on their chest and on their biceps, areas where they're more flexible, like in their hands and their fingers, along their neck and face and everything. These areas have finer and finer, smaller and smaller scales. So there's different types of scales on the body, and they're not all just green. They're different mixes of browns and golds and greens and hues like that. They're about 6.5 to 7.5 feet tall, no hair, vertical slits for pupils, eyes that are almond-shaped, and sometimes going further back around the sides of the head, small, tiny little slits for a nose, no bridge, no nose bridge. If it is, it's just so flat you can barely make it out.
Right.
Wide, lipless mouth, no gums showing, no teeth showing, not a ridged lip, but more of a pressed flat scales, no ears. Sometimes a bilateral bridge, brow bridge that goes up from the front where their eyebrows are, slightly V-shaped and back-sloping over a back-sloping head that's a little bit more conical, but it's also back-sloping. And this is where you get some of the ancient archaeological items showing a back-sloped head or a conical head. That's just a duplication of trying to look like these beings of antiquity that we were in once open contact with, at least in ancient times.
Right.
And now we are as well on the highest levels of not even the U.S. government, but I would say the shadow government, which has more of a classified clearance than even the surface government, because it's a need-to-know basis. And if it has to do with survival and sharing the underside of our planet with other beings, it would have to be the shadow government that would have those secrets.
So it's your assertion that the government, whatever government that might be, has known about these entities for a long time.
Mm-hmm. They've known about them for a while. They may have interacted with the grays at first and then evolved slowly into meeting more and more beings that had a reptilian signature to their physical bodies, including those in Roswell. All the signs have been there, but many years ago I had to come out and start noticing that these associations were out there with varying reports that I was hearing, and I started correlating the data, and it was, I made it my mission that I was going to make sure that the public as well as the UFO community recognized that we should be looking under our feet as well as overhead. And I'm not saying don't look overhead, and there's no such thing as extraterrestrial. I'm not saying that. I'm saying that they're there as well, I believe, but I'm trying to say we were maybe missing 50, who knows, maybe even 75 or 90% more under our feet that's well within our reach. Rather than relying on men with telescopes and careers at stake about what they say to tell us the truth.
Right.
You know, so all of us can somehow adventure out there, join a team up and go walk the jungle and get an adventurous life. Leave, you know, the movie theaters and all this fast lifestyle over here and go out and really have an adventure and suck up life for all it's worth. You have more of a chance meeting a reptoid doing that than you ever do sitting at home doing nothing and just, you know, paying your taxes and going to your job every day. It's important to get those things done, but not to focus as a main thing of your life.
All right, let me ask you a question right there. I'm on your homepage, John, okay, and I'm looking at introduction, okay? And I'm scrolling down, as you were describing the reptoids and how they look, you know, there's several pictures of reptoids on that thing. And then, of course, there's a couple of pictures of you, you know, on some of your treks. There's a picture of you there. It looks like you're inside of a cave in one shot. You're talking to some gentleman on another shot, and you got your binoculars on. And then it looks like you're overlooking some kind of canyon area or whatever. So,
God, you've been talking to John Lear again.
No, it's right there on the I never talked to John Lear.
He presses me on that picture.
I tell you, I know, and I'm not so much going there as much as I am. When you decide, and obviously you have a firm belief that, and it says so in the introduction thing, that reptoids have not caused any harm to humans that you can document, but that you do these treks, and it says, you know, from the ancient islands, or lands rather, of Aztecs, Maya, Pueblo Indians to the far eastern shores of Asia and beyond, John Rhodes treks into areas where few people dare stray from the path, where the majority of unknown animal or reptoid sightings may occur. So how many times do you go out and venture out into an area, John, and what determines where you go?
Every year that goes on, of course, you know, as you age, you start taking less trips, but I still get out enough to go into areas in which I really feel that I'm getting connected with nature in such a way to open up to hear about the reports and be able to pursue them on the spot. A lot of reports now that are being being provided and being talked about on the internet and also in different UFO communities. You got to understand at this point, because of how much talk there is on the internet and in UFO communities about reptoids, that there's going to be a larger degree of false reports. Now, some of them sound really, really good and original and sound legitimate, but because of something within man himself wanting to be recognized, wanting a sense of community and a sense of purpose, there was a noticeable increase in false reports that started coming in more and more. And when I first started doing this, I would be able to go out into mountain areas and sometimes up to 4 or 5 day treks and climb mountains as much as 9 or 10,000 feet.
Right.
And in areas in which, you know, if you go with another person, nobody wants to fall down and break a leg or sprain an ankle because, you know, it's dangerous country out there.
Right.
I can tell you, even personal experience, you can be looking for rattlesnakes and step right on one, because I did. And I went in one direction, the snake went into another. And when you get out into those areas, which are really kind of difficult to get to in the first place, with the sense of adventure that you're searching for something, it really makes a normal camping adventure or a camping trip into an adventure. When you're out in the wilderness like that, it also subjects you to being in areas in which there's no eyewitnesses, and if you're alone, strange things will happen because people or beings who are out there watching you, who may want to interact with you, would have that as an opportunity because they don't have to worry about any eyewitnesses testifying to the reality of your testimony if you told anybody afterwards. The more you put yourself out instead of sitting behind an armchair, the more you're going to get a sense of participation in the investigation, and it becomes more of a spiritual mission for people. And that's the difficult thing, because when you talk about the serpent image, a lot of people go out there and they start looking into it, and because it touches something so deep within themselves that it can push them into areas that they neither possibly thought that they could go. It's like a double-edged sword. It can be really great or it can be really bad depending on how you handle the adventure.
Right, and, sure.
So that was kind of my experiences when I started going out into the field looking for different types of cave systems, trying to triangulate areas in which contact or sightings had been made, putting myself into positions of vulnerability so maybe they could try and open up or initiate some sort of a sighting or contact, like I said before, because of no eyewitnesses. And also talking to the locals, and this means the locals even from different cultures and countries, to find out exactly what they'd seen, then correlating that with their religious beliefs in the area and what kind of symbols they use for their religious beliefs, to see if they're actually expressing a sense of spiritual experience rather than one of a physical reality. Because, you know, when you meet a reptoid, there's different types of beings you could meet. You could meet one physically real that you could touch, but then there are also those that have appeared that you could see partially through. And so it comes into this thing about physical density. Now that starts to bring up the question of, you know, dimensions. Are we talking about interdimensional beings? And I think we are. I believe that we, just as when we all die, and, you know, Johnny and you guys, when we were talking about, you know, we're just bored beings. Remember that conversation?
Yeah.
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 Mm-hmm. Right. We're just bored beings. And, when you put yourself out into that position to make contacts like that, it opens up a whole psycho-spiritual thing, too, because we're talking about experiencing something that's so phenomenal that it breaches your known parameters of reality. And when that happens, all of a sudden, you're more prone to have psychic events or synchronous events happen to where you feel like the universe is opening up some sort of a journey for you.
Right.
And in a way that it really is, because these guys, especially the reptoids, are tricksters. I mean, they won't give you any evidence, but they'll lead you around, and just when you think that you've figured out a pattern, they'll switch it on you. You know what I mean?
Yeah, exactly.
So does that mean that they have a sense of humor?
Oh, yeah. They have a sense of humor. It's not like our humor, though. Their humor is more of an intellectual humor.
Like, let's see how far we can push the human.
Well, yeah, and I think it's a way of, you know, pushing things around the floor to see how it reacts, just like a curious child would. If it saw a bug on the floor, it might put its finger in front of it to stop it from walking, and then all the bug sees is, oh, my God, a huge mountain fell in front of me. You know?
Right.
And that's
right.
The way we see the alien experience or the ET or interterrestrial experience. It's shocking. It's paradigm shifting. They're watching how we adapt to what they do and where they lead us.
You had said earlier in the interview here, you were talking about going underground, that not only had they gone underground, but also our government had bases underground. And I wanted to kind of follow up on that. I believe you have somewhere on your site posting from the Los Angeles Times, and I think it was like back in the early 1930s or something like that. And I'm taking that this is an actual article that you have got on there. Could you tell our listeners a little bit about what that article is about?
Yeah, we're talking about an article originally printed in 1934 from the Los Angeles Times, and it talks about this gentleman who was an engineer in Los Angeles area. His name was G. Warren Schiffelt. He was a geophysicist and mining engineer, and he claimed that he had been able to locate tunnels underneath Los Angeles and plan or map them out, and he believed that what created or inhabited at one time these tunnels were the remnant descendants of beings that the Hopis call the Snake Brothers, and that they inhabited this area. And he even devised different types of his own mechanical devices that could measure underground and feel gravity differences and such. He basically said that the city itself was laid out in the shape of almost like a lizard. He thought that he had at one time been able to X-ray into the earth and see an area in which he thought that were rooms leading to where there could be tablets that had a history of the snake people in them. Now,
right.
This idea of the snake people is something that can be traced back all the way to, oh my gosh, one of our most influential books, the Bible, the Holy Bible.
Sure.
You know, the ancient Jewish text that led to the Old Testament, when it talked about the serpent in the Garden of Eden, referred to something that had hands and feet. It wasn't just a simple snake. It was very definitive and without any kind of hesitation or misinterpretation, was talking about it walking upright on two legs and being able to speak to human beings. So
right.
Some of this ancient knowledge has been passed down, because remember, the Bible was a collection of ancient mythologies and histories around the world that was the unifying religion that would pull the world together at that time and draw it away from serpent worship, because the world was previously into serpent worship around the globe, and they wanted to move over to bird worship because they wanted the dove or the bird people,
right.
Angels. They wanted to shift it over into that symbol or that symbolic representation of spirituality. And under the Holy Roman Empire, as a guidance, actually, there was a man, Jesus. He was a real man, I believe, personally, and that he just seemed to fit the right place at the right time, and everything kind of fell right into place for this big world unifying religion. The serpent image was pushed down or cast down into a very negative light, and that same thing that was used for fear, telling us to fear the serpent or the snake, by the Roman Empire when they took over early Christianity, was to deal away from the human spirit of the average man, his sense of balance, because that serpent image, if you look back in Jungian psychology and everything, represented the reptilian brain in the back of your head, and your brain needs to be in full balance in order for you to be in balance and peace. And as long as that was cast into a dark area, people didn't have that in them. They feared it, and it put them psychologically out of balance and spiritually out of balance at that point. So bringing the reptilian image out and talking about these reptoids is also, on my behalf, an effort to return that wondrous spiritual connection of some sort that drives you back to your subconscious brain and to your genetic core, and have everybody reach in and reach somewhere deep within themselves and take it to a greater place. Because all of us have that potential. I departed off the Reptoid thing, but you understand where it's kind of all connected.
Of course.
Oh, sure.
And
absolutely.
Right. So the Hopis had this thing, getting back to this guy, Warren Schofield, there's a city underneath Los Angeles. He thought that all of these items were there, and this is just a continuation of the Hopi Indians' beliefs from the Grand Canyon area, where the serpent people, where I believe are the Reptoids, and the ant people that they called them, are the grays, because they lived underground. They look kind of like an ant with those big bulbous heads and thin, you know, extremities.
Right.
And they were underground like ants. I happened to be very connected with the Hopi, in as much as for 8 years I had a very close friendship with the spiritual chief of the Hopi, and the actual spiritual chief, because he was Stanley Ben Neptewa. And Stanley was the chief of Old Arabi Village, which is the oldest continually settled village in North America, by the way. Continually settled. Yes.
Wow.
And it was the first settling place of the Hopi. So since he was the chief of that village, which had no running water, no electricity, I mean, they were like people that believed that they had to live like that to connect themselves with the Great Spirit rather than buy into the white man's technologies and ways and comforts and everything. Well, yeah, it was wild. I had talked to him in regards to something that was found in the Grand Canyon back in 1909 by the Smithsonian Institution that I had found that he would want to know. And through that conversation, I worked into an 8-year friendship with him and spoke at great length about the serpent people.
Wow.
And my relationship with him was not appreciated by the other Hopi that were there, because they still distrust white man.
Right. I'm sure.
Rightly so, I might add.
Sure,
I'm in full support of that, you know, that distrust. I learned a lot about their ancient connections with these beings. And he was fully aware that we were coming into a time when the Hopis would have to return to what they called their underworld, or their through their Sipapuni, which means it's like an opening into the underworld. Once they had come upwards to the surface, they were a generation that's, you know, their ancestors survived the last catastrophe with the help of the ant people and also the snake people. And then when everything settled on Earth, they came up and repopulated, but they believe that they're going to have to be forced underground again because of what's about to happen.
Right. All right, John, let me stop you for a second. I want to go in a little bit different direction just for a short bit.
Sure.
I want the people that are members and guests of AboveTopSecret.com, I want them to know what brought John Rhodes to where he's at today. In other words, you know, tell me about your youth. Tell me about when you were a kid. What got you interested in lizards, a.k.a. Reptoids? In other words, what one thing maybe, John, along the way you said, okay, this is not just something that has a slight interest for me. This is something I want to pursue that is really important to me. At what age was that, and what were you doing, if you can recall?
Well, I had an eclectic childhood. I didn't stay put in one country. I had an education and an upbringing overseas in Southeast Asia and Europe and also the Middle East. And I was kind of like, you know, put in some interesting situations as a child. Very early in age, I went to a boarding school. I think it was starting at 5 or 6 years old, a boarding school on the island of Penang, which was off of Indonesia. And the island was surrounded by jungle, and I felt alone up there at that young age, and I didn't quite fit in. A lot of British military children were there because there was British military presence on the island at an Air Force base, and some of the plantation owners had some kids there. But I didn't feel like I quite fit in, and I would leave the school grounds and go off into the surrounding jungle And God, if they had known at that time, oh man, I'd have been in so much trouble. You know, a young child walks off in the jungle, you know, for 4 or 5 hours and nobody notices, you know.
Really?
But, I
Where's
really,
John? I don't know. We hadn't seen him.
Yeah, awful. My parents would have just had heart attacks. I would walk away, and for hours I would just, you know, I would be with nature. I would sit there and I would have fun with stick ants and lizards and centipedes. Hopefully, you know, thank God none of them were poisonous that I had contact with. And for those of you who have lived in those parts of the world, they can be very dangerous. And I kind of really connected with the animal kingdom at a young age. I love dogs and cats and all kinds of animals. I know you guys do too.
Yeah, we do.
Right.
You know,
yep.
Yeah. And you wonder out there, people who do not like the idea of aliens, could these be because they don't like animals?
Right.
You know,
that's
and they might see them as animals in some way. So my childhood was being exposed to that as well as being exposed to the Asian culture, because there was a lot of dragons around and symbolism. There were a lot of serpent images around that when I started getting older and grew up, I came back to the United States and, because of my upbringing, found it difficult again to relate to people. So because my life experiences were just so different, that when I came back and attended school here, it was a little bit difficult settling in because I felt so misplaced almost. But I started getting into my studies after high school. And at first it was looking like I might want to be heading into the science and into areas in which really could challenge me intellectually. And it was when I left university, I had this insatiable appetite to study. And I would, at the time when I was living in Las Vegas, I would attend the university library there and spend untold hours just going through microfilms and microfish, because I had just started learning about the whole idea of the, you know, the conspiracy or alien presence. You know, it's that first bite that you get.
Right, sure.
And we all remember our innocent years when we just didn't care, you know. Life was so easy, you know. We all sit here dreaming about, God, it was so easy back then.
Oh, yeah.
By the way, you know, I just want to remind our listeners and members that microfish was what they had before they had CDs.
Yeah.
Yeah, before we had...
It was far before
you had, a little projector that you went to, and you'd put a reel on there, and you'd reel it down, and you'd watch it on the screen, and that's how we got our information from the
archives. Right. It wasn't so long ago, you guys, that we had laser discs, too. Now they were the size of an LP. That's true.
That's right.
And one of those.
And one of those. Movie. Yeah. Right.
And then you had to flip it over for side two, I mean, for the second half, remember?
That's right, and they went the same direction as the 8-track. No offense to my good friend, John.
That's right, John.
No offense at all, John.
8-track sucks, John.
It was the 16-track that did it. No.
That's right.
But as you well know, that genius was well-deserved in that family.
Oh, really? Sure.
It kind of leaked over on John. I don't know what happened. You know, radiation. Like, sat too close to TV or something.
You didn't have a tinfoil hat back in those days.
That's right. Oh, who are we to laugh at poor John? You know, we're just John Lear wannabes, you know.
Yeah. We love you, John Lear.
Yeah, we love you, John. Sure we do.
And, getting back, when I had this insatiable appetite for knowledge, I just started looking to all kinds of things. My first impressions when I started hearing about individuals who had contact with reptilian humanoid life forms. And it was at one place that somebody had said, well, I saw this thing, and it didn't. And this is, we got to remember, nobody was talking about this.
Right.
You go on the internet at that time and you type in the word reptilian or serpent, ape man, or reptoid, any of those names that they're given to them, you'd come up with like 4 hits.
Right.
I remember these days, right? Because it's nothing.
Nothing.
So Nothing. And so what I've started doing is correlating these reports. I'd hear somebody say something that, and you know, as a good investigator, you don't share all of what you learn with the public. You withhold a certain piece of information that you use as a control device, so you recognize the legitimate stories from the non-legitimate stories, because there will be a hidden element that hasn't been published that with the real reports that you give weight to, I'm just making this up. I'm just using this as an example. If reptoids, all, you found out, God, through my reports I'm finding they all had red toenails, and I'm just making something ludicrous up.
Right.
As an example, when you hear somebody else have a reptoid report and you say, was there anything specific about them? And they said, no, I saw their feet. And were they wearing shoes? No. Was there anything different? No. Then you'd start thinking, okay, well, this person didn't pick up on that common denominator that hasn't been shared with the public, that's been kept secret. It's no different than when you have a crime scene and a murder. You know that the person calling in for the confession saying, yeah, I put that white scarf around her neck and strangled her. And they go, well, wait a minute, we never told the public there was a white scarf involved.
Right.
Okay? So, and we've seen this in movies, so this is just logical investigation process. When I started hearing these common denominators from people who are geographically separate, who did not know each other, didn't associate with the same groups, didn't communicate, no forms of communication or anything, no common interests even. When you start hearing that, and you're going, now, wait a minute, something's going on here that's truly interesting, because nobody's putting the dots together. And part of my skill, and part of John's skills, and other researchers like Jim Mars, my good friend Nori Hayakawa, and others that are also featured at ATS, we connect dots. That's all we do. We see a piece of information. We know how we can intuitively lead it to the next dot.
Right.
Now, it's just a weird skill. It's just like some people know how to do the Rubik's Cube, others don't.
Right.
Researchers of good quality are just perfect at looking and going, oh, now that kind of connects with that, and that looks like that, or it doesn't, and applying investigation skills to the whole process of your research. When I started hearing these reports, I started thinking, well, I've got to look into it more and more. And what I discovered is that there is a psychological thing going on. Some people are having visions. Some people are having lucid dreams. Some people are having true physical experiences. Some people are having experiences that transcend physical reality, but it has a sense of reality to it that's not quite normal. In other words, like you know you're asleep at night, but you have that dream, but in that dream, this dream's different because you can smell the air. You can feel
the snap
in the breeze.
Sure.
Have you guys had those ever before?
Oh, sure.
Oh, absolutely.
Right, and you know that's not a normal dream because you were transported somewhere almost. Yeah, it's a strange thing, and I'm sure many, many people out there in the audience that are listening to this can identify with that as well. Okay, now, most people would say, they're just dreams. Well, yeah, you could say that, but if you weren't the experiencer and you weren't there to physically measure any kind of energy changes in the body or anything that happened in the room at the time, who are you to say? So we have that going on as well. We also have a large number of false reports coming in from people who want to write a book, or they want to talk at the UFO conventions.
Right.
We're not going to name names.
They want to sell their music CD. You know, or they want to sell another book because they've already written 17.
Right.
Or, you know.
But so, we're not going to name names, are we, John?
No, we don't have to.
We don't have to.
They know who they are.
Right. So go ahead, I'm sorry.
I was just going to say, that's got to make it tough for a researcher like yourself to be able to stand out and above all that. I mean, you yourself, you are in the industry as a film producer. Now, with all the incredible information, research that you've done, and stories that you've heard, and eyewitness accounts, have you ever thought about taking all that information and maybe doing something with it?
Well, the point being is that since I realized that this was a real thing happening, I have done everything within my contact power to encourage the open conversation or artistic expression in the media of reptilian humanoid beings through being able to provide open information to the public which gets constantly scanned by people in Hollywood, by having direct contact with other producers and other filmmakers, taking every opportunity I can in order to encourage the conversation or at least the pursuit of serious consideration into what I'm trying to present to the public. I'm not telling everybody that they're real, but because I cannot convince everybody of that. What I'm saying is that there's enough there to deserve serious scientific investigation. Forget everything that you've heard about all the fantasies of bloodlines and this, that, and the other. Whether real or unreal, it doesn't matter, because those conversations and that kind of fear being generated does nothing but rob you of energy, drain you of your immune system response and reflexes, and it dims you spiritually. The only place to look is in a different area, meaning can you take something personal out of experience or the pursuit of the question and have it change your life in a positive way. And also being able to encourage that conversation in the media is also desensitizing the human population from all forms of media, literacy, comic books, games, video games, all of these areas. A form of desensitization takes place. So when we do have conversation about contact with beings like this, whether in a defense mode or, you know, just open contact in a peace mode or whatever it might be, that we don't knee-jerk out of fear, that we can somehow take one breath after another and get over the initial shock and then start asking questions that are above and beyond, like, what our government has to offer as an explanation. That's the only thing I can say.
Off air here, we had mentioned something about a guide, the Crypto Hunter Guide. Would you like to elaborate a little bit on that?
Crypto Hunter Guide. It's going to be something that I'm putting together in order for everybody to be able to research different aspects of my research and the research at the center. Not specifically targeted at reptoids, but that's our main, reptilian humanoids is our main focus, but also into other areas of research, including that of ancient archaeological mysteries, that of different types of Native American myths and histories having to do with reptilian humanoid beings and different types of advanced civilizations. What we consider to be a portal event, which is coming up, which is 2012, and also specifically 2011, more importantly, I think. And that's going to be presented up, and I'll present up on ATS for everybody to go to. So if you just stay tuned to my forum there under the Conspiracy Master, you will also will be able to see what's happening and experience that as well. And join the journey, the adventure.
I love joining the journey. And on behalf of the ATS Mix Show, I'm Dave Rabbit.
And I'm Johnny Anonymous.
And I'm John Lear.
I love that guy.
I love that guy.
He's my superhero.
ATS Mix from AboveTopSecret.com is over.
You've been listening to the ATS Mix with Dave Rabbit and Johnny Anonymous. If you have a comment, suggestion, an opposing view, or would like to participate in a future show of ATS Mix, please contact Dave or Johnny at www.abovetopsecret.com. The views expressed on ATS Mix do not necessarily reflect those of the staff and management of the Above Network, LLC, or any of its affiliates. Thanks for listening. You may now reattach your tinfoil hat. We'll be right back.